Lake Effect continues on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Bonnie North. Parts of the Midwest are still reeling from spring flooding caused by a winter's worth of snow melting in a very short period of time. The floods have caused hundreds of millions of dollars in property damage, even in places that have planned for such an occurrence.
There is less a small community in Guatemala can do to plan for the devastation caused by a volcanic eruption, and that's where the work of people like Mike Paddock comes in. Paddock is a Milwaukee area engineer and also a volunteer with the international organization Engineers Without Borders. We invited him to join us to talk about the role he played in helping that community recover. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Give us some background on what happened in Guatemala that took you there this most recent time.
Yeah. So in June 3rd of last year, the volcano Fuego had a major eruption. And what does a major eruption look like down in Guatemala? It's a six-mile cloud of debris that gets spewed up into the air. And when that debris comes down, because gravity forces it down, it causes what we call pyroclastic flows. So that's basically landslides of all that debris rushing down the mountain several hundred miles per hour. And that's the stuff that causes all the damage, because it's not just dust. It's big rocks like the size of a table. But it's also super hot, so if you happen to be touching it, it would burn you. And so we lost about 500 lives during that event.
Well, and I think a lot of us, when we think about volcanoes, we have this image of the Hawaiian eruptions, the molten lava, you know, pouring down a hillside. But that is not what this looks like, but the destruction is similar.
Yeah, so, you know, every volcano, there's different types of volcanoes. This particular one is a little bit different than the ones that we would see in Hawaii. They call this a stratovolcano, which is the most common, and this would be the type that has a lot of this ash and debris that goes up and then has this big kind of debris flow that comes down.
And as is often the case, if I'm not wrong, the volcano exists in an area of some seismic activity, so there have been earthquakes in the same region, right?
Yeah, for sure. So Guatemala is kind of a high-risk region just to start out with. So it's at the nexus of three continental plates. So we've got the Pacific plate that's to the west. To the north, we have the North American plate. And to the south, we have the Caribbean plate. So because of that, there's a lot of earthquakes as well as a lot of volcanoes in the region.
Give us maybe paint a picture of what the landscape in this area looks like. This is obviously far south of where we are in Milwaukee. Are we talking about a pretty tropical climate?
Yeah, so Guatemala's got a varied climate across it. So there's an altiplano that is kind of in the northern region, which is mountainous and actually pretty comfortable from a temperature standpoint. And then that goes all the way down to like a jungle climate as you get closer to the coast. And where this particular location is that it's pretty close to the coast. So it's pretty hot. A lot of banana trees and like jungle type activities. We actually were working on four different sites, and a couple of the sites were right in the heart of sugarcane country, so there was a lot of sugarcane plantations. But it's also as we got a little bit more elevation, a lot of coffee. So there's a lot of coffee plantations and trees and things like that. But certainly a lot warmer and stickier, I'll say, than it was here in Wisconsin.
Well, so you mentioned the loss of life, which was extensive. What about as an engineer, I mean, let's talk about the kinds of structural destruction this caused.
Yeah, so that flow did a lot of damage to the infrastructure. Certainly homes, as well as a lot of the other infrastructure like water. So, for example, like water lines, which typically are being serviced by springs in this area, be taken out. So all of a sudden, even the hospitals that are trying to respond to this type of event don't have potable water, which was a major concern. But the primary thing that I was working on with Engineers Without Borders was the replacement of four bridges. And the reason that they were so important is they're really critical evacuation routes. So if the volcano erupts again, now the people wouldn't be trapped and they would be able to evacuate from those locations. So that was the mission.
How does this play into to the work that you already do as an engineer?
Well, it was very interesting. So my career, 25 years working with CH2M, all in here in Milwaukee. A lot of it was the freeway work, had the privilege of leading the Marquette Interchange design. And so for engineers, it's all about kind of weighing risk. And for me, it was really amazing at this site because when I walked there for the very first time last July, it was like literally being there the day after God created the heavens and the earth. There was just destruction everywhere.
You walked there. How it must? It can't be easy to get to a place like this, especially after a volcano.
Right. So you have to make your way there with four-wheel drive vehicles and then make a little bit of a trek by foot to be able to get to the site to see what is the potential solutions for something like this, right? And you want to make sure that it's an appropriate response. And the first engineering reaction would be well, we got to let things settle down, right? You know, we need to know is more material going to come down from the volcano? Is there going to be the river is going to take it all away? So there's just too many unknowns. I can't do this. And then, of course, then you realize that these people are trapped. And so you've got to come up with some sort of solution. So that was the challenge on this particular site.
Do you work on both a short-term and a long-term solution, or is this something that you really only have, you know, one bite at the apple here? You've got to do something that will both serve the people who are currently trapped but also last beyond, you know, presumably the next time some kind of seismic activity happens.
Yeah. So, Mitch, this is my seventh disaster response that I've done with Engineers Without Borders around the globe. And usually we have an interim solution, so it'd be immediately restoring water lines or maybe temporary shelters or temporary bridges, and then there's a longer-term solution. In this particular case with these bridges, I believe that there probably won't be long-term vehicle bridges or bigger solutions put in there. So we knew that this kind of needed to cover both bases, immediate evacuation route as well as provide access to healthcare, education, and markets.
So how do you do it? How do you get the material in place that you need to be able to construct a bridge in honestly, a place that's so difficult to get to?
Yeah, it's a challenge for us. Fortunately, there was a road that was able to be put in, so we were able to get things like cement delivered and those kinds of things. But the real challenge is actually the construction. So the construction on these projects is done with volunteer labor. So we had 8 different communities of the 15,000 people there, and they would rotate and provide 100 laborers on the project every day. It was my job to try to figure out how to keep them all busy effectively, and that's how the actual work was done. And, of course, the workers have varying degrees of skill. Some of them were builders, and some of them were farmers. So we needed to be able to make sure that we were maximizing their skill base, too.
How many engineers are on the project?
There was myself and 2 Guatemalan engineers that were on the project.
Would I assume that you speak Spanish?
Well, I do my best. I actually had to do a live TV interview in Spanish, which caused me to soil myself, but I did my best.
Well, and so talk about before and after. What's in place there now?
Yeah. So before, the issue was is people weren't going to be able to get across, and especially during the rains. So timing is everything when it comes to disaster response. So it's kind of interesting when we do development work, it's all about sustainable solutions. But when it comes to disaster response, I kind of have to take my hard hat and turn it around and realize that it's all about speed because we're trying to help people before we have people tip over, if you will. So in this particular case, we wanted to get these bridges in place before the rains came, which should start in a couple of weeks. So we had to build these 4 bridges in 6 months. So that was really an aggressive time frame. So the people were worried, right? I mean, when we got there at all these sites, people are concerned because they know that they're going to be trapped, especially when the rains start to come. And so they're really concerned. And, of course, we were able to get these bridges put in place, get them across a span, and really took a lot of that pressure off of them. You know, one of the things that I thought was amazing is that it was more than the bridge because it was something positive finally in their lives that they could work on together that was tangible and they could see, right? And so that really helped, I think, mend some of the social fabric that had been stretched and torn.
This is the point that the impact of this bridge construction goes beyond the physical here.
Exactly. So if you can imagine, we've got 8 different communities, right? And there's 2 different municipalities, like local governments, counties, if you will, and the Army Corps of Engineers are involved. And it's been my experience when it comes to disasters that it really stretches that social fabric, right? And so now all of a sudden you lose faith in your God, you lose faith in your government, in your neighbors, and maybe even the rest of your family members. So all of these entities are looking at each other, knowing that they have to depend on each other, but at the same time they're doubting if they're really going to be able to succeed. And so through the bridge project, It started out with a lot of people with a lot of concerns, and then over the months, we saw that that changed, and people got comfortable working with each other again, and relationships were pulled back together, and it really started to mend that social fabric, which maybe was the biggest gift that that happened with this project.
You're building literal and metaphorical bridges here.
Exactly, exactly.
Who called you down there? Who gets involved to say, hey, we need a team from Engineers Without Borders to play a role in this?
Yeah, so Engineers Without Borders gets their request from several different places. Much of the time, when I did the response to Maria, that was a request that we got from the United Nations. So United Nations sometimes calls us. When I did my response over in Ethiopia, that was United Office of Foreign Disaster Assistance from USAID. In this particular case, it was interesting because the call had come from Rotary International. And so the Rotarians were actually part of this response. And our own club here in Milwaukee, the Milwaukee Rotary Club, was part of the donations that helped pay for the materials for the project. And I'm also a Rotarian as well as a member of EWB.
So when you're involved in this and you've built four bridges to as the engineer who's kind of overseeing this work, do you have to be confident enough in what's been constructed to be willing to be the first person across that bridge once it's standing?
Absolutely. I mean, the people are putting a lot of faith in you. And I'll share with you one story, Mitch, that was from a different project. That it was for the volcano, and we were building the bridge wide enough so that we could get vehicles across, right? And these bridges that we build are made out of cable. It's actually repurposed cable from the port. So we recycle that cable that they use to lift all the containers and then give it a retirement home, if you will, to be used on a bridge. So we have to inspect it and all those kinds of good things to make sure it's safe, but it's a great solution for them. Well, these people had never seen a bridge like this before. And so they kept asking me, how many bulls could go on the bridge and how many motorcycles can cross on the bridge and how many cars and all of those kinds of things. But when the day came for the first vehicle to go across and we called the taxi to come over and be the first vehicle to take some of the leaders across, the taxi driver's like, no way, Jose, man, I'm not going across. And I realized at that point that I needed to drive the taxi across the first time. And of course, after the first one went, now there's taxis going across it all the time. But yeah, you have to have that kind of confidence to be able to stick your neck out a little bit.
You said the rains are likely to start up here in mm-hmm. the next few weeks as mm-hmm. we're having this conversation. That has to be kind of where the rubber meets the road for you, kind of keep track of how well this has worked.
Exactly. And each site has its own set of risks that we had. And so that'll be kind of the test. The real thing is, as we have talked a lot with the volcanologists to try to figure out what that risk profile looks like, right? And one of the big things is if we get hit with a major event like a hurricane, which does happen in Guatemala as well, then that could really raise that risk profile. And the thing that I guess for me that got me more comfortable with what we were doing there, because how do you build a bridge that's going to be volcano proof? Really not possible. What I realized that the purpose of this bridge was not to be a long-term solution for access to healthcare and markets. What it was is to provide an evacuation route for those 15,000 people. So if there's another eruption and those 15,000 people get across there into safety and then the bridge gets destroyed, I've done my job.
Well, and I wonder if one of the long-term impacts of this is just to have a plan for the next time a bridge has to be constructed after the next volcano hits and the people have gotten out safely. There's a plan in place that this is how you can rebuild it.
That's true. And of course, one of the big wild cards that we have is that when so much material gets moved down from the mountain, sometimes the rivers move. So my bridge might be there, but it might not be over the river anymore. So that causes another separate set of challenges. So there is always those kinds of risks, but at the same time, when you've got that many people that are trapped, you've got to come up with an immediate solution.
So it's spring in Milwaukee. Are you on call for the next disaster now? How often do you go out on projects like this?
Well, it's been quite a bit of a stretch here for me. 2 years ago was over in Afar, Ethiopia, on a drought. Last year was spending most of my time in the Caribbean, responding to Maria. And then now it's been since July working on the volcano. So I'm looking forward to spending a little bit of time getting caught up with my wife, rediscovering her a bit.
She's pleased about that.
She hasn't thrown me out. And then I'm hoping this later this month be able to get up north and spend a little time making maple syrup with my 80-year-old dad.
That sounds great. Well, Mike Paddock, thank you so much. Thanks for your work and for sharing it with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Mike Paddock is a Milwaukee area engineer and a volunteer with the international organization Engineers Without Borders. You can see photos of the work that he did in Guatemala at WUWM.com.